Blog Talk Radio.
Never succeed in disputing this point with me, that the very reason why we, the United States of America, are the greatest nation in all of the human experience is because we are all a literal etouffee of every culture on this planet, all living and working together as a team and blessed by the living God, with the freedom to express our thoughts, protect our families, and pursue our dreams. In fact, it's the very recipe which formulates the great American story. I'm Bob Day, and once again I welcome you all to another excellent installment of the very best in intellectual radio entertainment. It's the great American story. Amazing guests, live conversations, and the stories of our own people told in ways you've never heard before. Now, just sit back and relax, open your mind, and prepare to wrap it around a piece of mind. I'm Bob Day, and I'll be right back with another great American story.
On a bayou down Louisiana way, you watch the cold fog drifting over San Francisco Bay. Have you heard a Bob White calling in the Carolina Pines, or heard the bellow of a diesel in the Appalachia mines? Does the call of the Niagara thrill you when you hear her waters roar? You look with awe and wonder at Massachusetts shore, where men who braved a hard new world first stepped on Plymouth Rock. Do you think of them when you stroll along a New York City dock? Have you seen a snowflake drifting in the Rockies way up high? Have you seen the sun come blazing down from a bright Nevada sky? Do you hail to the Columbia's rushes of the sea, or bow your head at Gettysburg, or struggle to be free? Have you seen the mighty Teton, to watch an eagle soar? Have you seen the Mississippi roll along Missouri's shore? Have you felt a chill at Michigan when on a winter's day her waters rage along the shore in thunderous display? Does the word aloha make you warm? Do you stare in disbelief when you see the surf come roaring in at Waimea Reef? From Alaska's cold to the Everglades, from the Rio Grande to Maine, my heart cries out, my pulse runs fast, the might of her domain. You ask me why I love her? I've a million reasons why. My beautiful America, beneath God's wide, wide sky.
1972 and times were changing. The Vietnam War was coming to an end and so was the draft. The Pentagon had made a choice as to who would be the right leader to walk the military through its massive transition into what we now call the modern all-volunteer military without a draft. I'm Bob Day, and I'll be right back with another great American story. You know, if you're in the telecom industry and you don't know what a bond washer is, then you are way behind the curve. You better go find out now at bondwasher.com. That's BONDwasher.com. Bondwasher.com. And you better hurry before your boss finds out that you do not know what a bond washer is. Bondwasher.com. Bond washers at bondwasher.com. Hal Moore, and he was born in Kentucky, and as a teen was an obvious military prodigy. He also had the aptitude to match. In his late teens, Moore moved to Washington, D.C. in hopes of receiving an appointment to West Point, and with the help of a congressman who he had deeply impressed, Hal had actually made it and sailed through the academics like a hot knife through butter. After graduating West Point in 1945 at the rank of second lieutenant, Hal Moore went to Harvard, where he earned his first master's degree. This one was in international relations. Then, still at the rank of second lieutenant, Moore began teaching. But soon after, in the year of 1948, Hal left the classroom to serve in post-war Japan. Later reassigned to the 82nd Airborne at Fort Benning, Georgia, he volunteered for the testing of experimental, yes, I said experimental, parachutes. Wow. That's nuts. Moore was testing parachutes at Benning for 2 years and then was again reassigned in 1952 to lead an infantry rifle and mortar company in the Korean campaign, and simultaneously as regimental and divisional chief of staff advising on all operations involved in the Korean War. After the war, Moore returned to West Point with the rank of major, instructing on infantry tactics and training techniques, finding a huge interest in a student soldier who had, in time, become his own prodigy, who we all know as another great military leader by the name of General Norman Schwarzkopf, the later leader of the U.S. and Allied troops in the Gulf War and beyond. Later, Hal became an instructor at the Army and Staff College, where, as usual, he excelled by formulating and creating a brand new form of warfare, which he called air assault, still in heavy use and widely respected even today. After earning his second master's degree at George Washington University, Hal was placed in command of the very first air assault unit ever, which we all know as Air Mobile, and or the first air cav. Wow, pretty impressive. Well, being an expert in military history, Moore was a bit set back on his heels, you might say, by a weird twist of fate when his unit was redesignated as the 7th U.S. Cavalry, which, in case you don't know, was the same unit in which General Custer led all of his troops to their death at Little Bighorn. Hal and his troopers were then sent to Vietnam, where they engaged in the very first U.S. offensive of the war and badly outnumbered by over 9-1 in the Battle of Yad Drang. As the North Vietnamese enemy poured from their caves and tunnels in what seemed like an endless stream of gophers, Hal's military genius and outstanding leadership abilities came to light in a way that no one could avoid seeing, especially the enemy, and even better yet, his own men, whom he loved as though they were his own sons. Hal Moore and his men fought with all their hearts and all they had for 3 days and two nights until final victory, using forward observers calling in almost constant artillery, mortars, and airstrikes, much of which came in at danger close range. Many of our men died in that battle, and some even by friendly fire, but Even with all the horrific casualties, Hal Moore's strategic and leadership genius brought victory in the end and prevented what, by anyone's math, would have been a sure disaster and or absolute massacre. After the epic and hideous battle in Yad Drang, the Pentagon knew that the choice was obvious for who could and would lead the U.S. through the transition, after the war, into a brand new form and brand new era called the modern all-volunteer military. Moore pushed back at first, but seeing the need himself, finally gave in and took the reins. And you know, I'd say he did a damn good job, because as everyone on Earth knows, we still have the greatest military in all of human history. Well, I'm sure that some of you already know the name Hal Moore, and many more know that you've heard it, but aren't quite sure where. Now, let me help you out a bit. Hal Moore's leadership and the nasty battle of Yad Drang were immortalized by the great Mel Gibson in the movie we all know named We Were Soldiers. Yes, it was true, to say the least. Man, all that from a kid from Kentucky. What a story, huh? And what a hero. I'm Bob Day. I've just told you another great American story.
Tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich? Working harder than ever, but getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare? Having someone else raise your children? With our opportunities, you can start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss, work from home, and live a happier life. At Be The Boss Network, you'll find hundreds of work-from-home opportunities that you can literally start today and be earning money as soon as next week. Go to freedom118.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss. Get out of the rat race. Work from home. Go to freedom118.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 118.com. Go to freedom118.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You be the boss. Go to freedom118.com.
Hey everybody, Mike Rayford here, a.k.a. Mike the Wine Guy, with a reminder for you to tune into The Good Life Show, a Saturday afternoon talk show that is interesting, fun, informative, and entertaining, where we cover food, wine, travel, and lifestyle. That's The Good Life Show, your weekend antidote for the rest of the week. Every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4, right here on KMYC, 1410 AM, Marysville, Yuba City. Visit MikeTheWineGuy.com to listen to the free podcast, and follow us on Facebook at Mike the Wine Guy.
Again, I'm Bob Day, back with another weekly installment of The Great American Story, broadcast live from our flagship station here in Northern California, AM 1410, KMYC, The Patriot. And, you know, we're back live. Last week, we did a 4th of July special, so I wasn't on here live. I was, in fact, at the time, I think it was playing. I think I was floating down the river with my son and a few of my buddies. My son came in from the Air Force, and I had a good time floating down the Yuba River. But nonetheless, we are here live, and I'm going to take callers. We got no, well, actually, we have a co-host. Our co-host will be the mighty Santos, our illustrious board op in there, Matt Yontz. He's off doing concrete work or something today. Who knows what he's doing? Probably something really, really, really bad. Probably something disgusting that I'd rather not want to know about. But nonetheless, we do have Santos here. Say hey, Santos.
Hi, Bob. Hi, America.
There you go. Hello, America. I'm a little out of it today. If I sound a little out of it today, it's because I am a little out of it today. Feeling kind of weird. You know, I've had a long week. It's been a long 2 weeks. I mean, probably one of the busiest stretches of the year so far. But a couple days ago, I had surgery. I'm feeling kind of weird. Hopefully, my surgeon's listening to the show right now, because if you are, I'll be calling you Monday. There's something wrong. I don't know what it is. I feel stupid. I can't feel the skin on my left arm. I can't feel the toes on my left foot. And my right foot is starting to become numb. So I think you hit one of the wrong nerves there. I don't know what it is. Holy mackerel. Last couple days, you know, my youngest kids, they were on vacation with their mother. And they just got home last night, so I didn't have that many responsibilities. So the last couple of days after the surgery, I was in so much pain, my joints and my bones all hurt so bad. I laid in bed for the better part of the last 2 days. And I don't know what the deal is. Maybe there's a surgeon out there, a doctor, a neurologist out there who's got some idea. You can call in. But I'm not feeling too bright either. I feel like I'm about half retarded. So I'm definitely going to be calling the surgeon on Monday. I don't know what the deal is. Maybe he got the wrong nerve. I had the surgery I had, it doesn't involve scalpels. It just involves really long needles. And I had an occipital block, greater occipital block. And they go up with a needle under the base of the skull, and they shoot up your occipital nerve where it comes out of the brain with three different kinds of things. I'm not sure what they are. I think one of them's alcohol. They try to kill it, but it won't die. It just keeps reviving itself. So I've been having this done like every 4 months for the last probably about 4 years. But never had these after effects. So it kind of bothers me a little bit.
Sounds like it. There weren't any extra nuts and bolts left over afterwards, were there?
I don't know. That's the problem. I was unconscious, so I'm not sure.
You don't know. You didn't wake up in the middle of it, huh?
No, not this time. I have had experiences where I could feel the needles, mm-hmm. plural, and it's really painful. But I think I was halfway dreaming because I could see the needles and my brain and everything as if I was viewing the surgery from inside my head.
Wow.
I told the surgeon about that, and he goes, well, I guess we'll have to have the anesthesiologist up your cocktail.
Good. I've only had a few surgeries in my life, but, man, they're over before I even realize I'm out.
Yeah, it's like the greatest nap you can have.
It really is.
It is. Oh, I love the nap. Man, I'll tell you. It's like, as soon as an anesthesiologist says, okay, Bob, now I'm going to start putting in your anesthetic or whatever you call it. And as soon as I hear her saying that, I start feeling like I'm really high. Next thing I know, I blink, and I'm waking up a few hours later in a different room.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Man, I'll tell you what, I wish I could have some of that stuff for the weekends when the kids are visiting their mom. I'd just give it to myself. I'd take a really good nap. Oh, boy. Well, I'll tell you what. This is the thing, there's a lesson to be learned in all this. You know, if you're a young guy and you're going into the military, you know, you got to think about testosterone and logic, okay? And when you get the idea you want to tell your recruiter that you want to be airborne, you got to recognize that's only testosterone. There's no logic involved there. You know, you could land on your head like I did,
right,
and end up having a surgery like this for the rest of your life and wake up one afternoon and you can't feel your arm or your toes. And you feel a little stupid.
A lot of people out there probably saying, oh, you're more than a little bit stupid. Well, okay, grant you that, but now it's even worse than it was before. But I'm not dumb enough to vote Democratic yet, so I think I still got a way down the road to go. A
couple more jumps ought to take care of that.
There you go. Maybe if I jumped and landed on my head again, maybe it would reverse all the... I doubt it. I'm not willing to find out. I'm really not. Well, I'll tell you what, that last story is a brand new story, never heard before. Even the guy who wrote it didn't hear it. Well, actually, I rewrote it. So the guy that sent me the draft, Mike Flaherty, he wrote the original version, which I thought I was going to use as it was until I started doing it, and I ended up rewriting the whole cotton-picking thing. But nonetheless, it was started by Mike Flaherty. He was the primary writer. I guess I'd be called the co-writer in this one. And Hal Moore, what a hell of a guy, man. I'll tell you what, I saw you had to run outside for something, Santos, so you didn't hear the story.
No, I didn't catch it.
You know the movie We Were Soldiers with Mel Gibson?
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know the guy Mel Gibson played, the
right.
commander?
Mm-hmm.
That's Hal Moore.
Okay.
And that's who that last story was about. It's brand new. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about Yaw Drang. I mentioned the Battle of Yaw Drang in there, but the Battle of Yaw Drang is an entirely different story. And it's already been done. The movie's so popular and still so contemporary that it just felt like it'd be kind of pointless to do a story on Yaw Drang right now.
Mm-hmm.
But Hal Moore, the person, is kind of what this story was centered around. It was, who was he? He wasn't just the guy we saw on the movie We Were Soldiers. The guy was a hell of a guy. Really was. And started out as just a little kid from Kentucky. You know, go figure. No offense to people out in Kentucky, but you know what I'm getting at. Just, you know, he wasn't born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He wasn't born a senator's son or anything like that. Just very average, normal kid who had incredible, exceptional, very rare and unique leadership abilities. And in fact, you know, that's the very reason that his men, the ones who did survive Yaw Drang, did survive. They really owe it all to Hal Moore and his leadership. It's incredible. And the movie was very accurate. I watched, when I was researching this story, I watched an interview with Hal Moore that was done before he passed away. And boy, I'll tell you what, Mel Gibson did an absolutely excellent job of portraying Hal Moore in the movie. But I would say he could have done a little more. The real Hal Moore was even more, no pun intended, the real Hal Moore was even more than what we saw in the movie We Were Soldiers. It's incredible. I wish I could do his whole story, but it would take like 3 hours. And but, you know, he was the guy that the Pentagon looked to, and they said, this is the only guy that we can get that we know will walk the military through their transition to an all-volunteer military, and he did a damn good job. Well, we're going to get out of here, pay a couple of bills, and we're going to be back with a very controversial story that actually got me kicked off one of the biggest radio stations we had. It's called No Beans Boston. We'll be right back with a great American story.
Could you do with a $100 Visa gift card? A lot, right? $100 can get you a lot of things, including peace of mind. We're Alliance Home Security, and we give our customers peace of mind and $100 Visa gift cards. Right now, and only through this exclusive radio offer, we're giving every homeowner who has us install our home security system and signs up for our monitoring service a $100 Visa gift card. No tricks, no gimmicks, just a world-class home security system installed in your home for free, and you receive a $100 Visa gift card. Put this number in your smartphone or just call us right now. 1-800-521-3436. That's 1-800-521-3436. Ask us to install your home security system and get a $100 Visa gift card. 1-800-521-3436. Free same-day installation and a $100 Visa gift card. 1-800-521-3436. Call right now.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich, working harder than ever, but getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our opportunities, you can start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss, work from home, and live a happier life. At Be the Boss Network, you'll find hundreds of work-from-home opportunities that you can literally start today and be earning money as soon as next week. Go to freedom118.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss. Get out of the rat race. Work from home. Go to freedom118.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 118.com. Go to freedom118.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You be the boss. Go to freedom118.com.
You know, I had a hard time in high school history classes because I argued with the teachers. I thought they were teaching crap. Well, if I could go back and do it all again, I wouldn't change a thing. I'm Bob Day, and I'll be right back with another great American story.
Hi, I'm Ravina. I'm 7 years old and I'm blind. You can help me live the life I want.
Help Ravina and other blind people by making a tax-deductible donation of your used car, truck, or almost anything with wheels to the National Federation of the Blind. Just call 866-282-7327 or visit carshelpingtheblind.com. That's carshelpingtheblind.com. And if you know a blind person who needs help, email nfb@nfb.org.
If I asked you all who shot John Wilkes Booth, most of you wouldn't know. But I'm sure some of you would, and if you're from Oliverst, Booth shot Lincoln. Lincoln was once a president of our country, the United States, of America. You know, remember that sticker on your escort? Well, anyway, no matter what your answer was, I think you're all wrong. The guy who got all the credit for killing Booth was Thomas Boston Corbett. I like to call him No Beans Boston, because the guy cut off his own. He castrated himself in 1858 because he said God told him to. Anyway, No Beans was a little nuts, no pun intended, and everyone knew it because he was always on some kind of a mission from God. And he said when he shot Booth that he used a carbine. Well, Booth was clearly shot with a handgun, and when Booth's dead body was dragged from the barn where they caught up to him, one of the soldiers said they heard the commanding officer say he shot himself. Nevertheless, No Beans Boston still took all the credit for the capture and killing Booth, and before not too long was a national hero and written up in the history books. He's also given a cream job as a doorkeeper for the Kansas State Legislature. That is until 1887, just a few years later, when he threatened some lawmakers with a gun, and then he was committed to an insane asylum. Oh, don't worry. He wasn't there for very long. Apparently, at some point, Corbett managed to escape the nut house, and much like his own pair, No Beans Boston was never seen or heard from again. I'm Bob Day, and I've just told you another great but sterile American story.
No Beans Boston. I know the sound quality wasn't that great, but that's a really old story, and I played it for a reason. I tried to clean up the sound quality a little bit, but it's just so old. That's one of the stories from back when I was just starting out and my studio was just kind of, you know, thrown together. Anyway, it's called No Beans Boston. It's about the guy who supposedly shot Frank. See what I mean? I told you I'm getting kind of stupid. Can't even remember what I'm talking about half the time ever since that surgery. I'd like to know what they gave me for the anesthesia. But anyway, the guy that shot John Wilkes Booth, the assassin of Abraham Lincoln, who supposedly killed him anyway. But the reason I played it, there is a reason I played that old story, and it's because years and years ago, I'm not really sure even which year it was back before this show started, the long show, and I was doing just the short stories, and they were on the radio. And one of the biggest station at that time that I had was KFRM out of Salina, Kansas. And it's just one station, but it's a blowtorch, and it broadcasts like in 11 different states. And everything was going good. In fact, the audience loved it so much, the program director had called me. And this is back at a time when Joplin, Missouri got nailed twice. They got nailed by, I think it was a tornado and then a flash flooding or something like that. I mean, just basically wiped out the city of Joplin. And there were so many people out there listening to the radio and cleaning up rubble and this and that that they kept calling into that radio station saying, hey, we want to hear more of these stories because we're out here cleaning up this rubble and that's all we got to listen to is radio. And so they had me do a bunch of liners, you know, to the effect of, you know, like, hey, all you out there in Joplin, we're all praying for you. Keep on trucking, this kind of, you know, kind of thing, encouraging because they were listening. And then all of a sudden, I got word from through my syndication manager that I was being dropped. And I was dropped regardless of how much the audience loved The Great American Story. I was being dropped because the general manager of that station, KFRM, was offended by the story that we just played, the one you just heard, No Beans Boston. He was offended because I make fun of a guy who cut off his own nads. You know, and I'm thinking, well, maybe he took it personal because he got his own nads cut off or something. You know, I don't know what in the world? There's no way to run a radio station, that's for sure. The most popular show on your station, and you're going to cut it because you were offended by one very subtle joke in a story. Well, here's why I'm telling you this, and here's why I played that story. Well, since the 2-hour show, things have kind of changed, you know. I'm trying to think. I think it was about a year ago, KFRM signed back on with The Great American Story. And, well, you know, I was glad because they're a big station. They cover a big section, almost the entire Midwest. And everything was going fine until last week. And last week they dropped us again. The same general manager dropped The Great American Story again, but this time because he was offended by a different story, a story that was called Patty's Prison. Now, Patty's Prison is a horrible story. It's about a horrible woman who did horrible things to children. But it's one of those stories that, even though it may be horrible, it's still a part of the American fabric and the American history, and it's a story that I thought should be told. I think it may be a race issue, because Patty's Prison is about a black woman in the 1800s. She was not a slave, but she made slaves out of children. And she would adopt children. She would take children in from orphanages. She would just find children that were homeless, which there were a lot of back in those days. A lot of children would leave home because their parents couldn't afford to feed them anymore, like my grandparents, you know. And she would take them in, act like she's going to be a mama to them, and then she would turn them into slaves. And at one point in the story, she took the little kid, a little 10-year-old kid who was also black, and he couldn't finish his dinner. And she's yelling at him to finish his dinner, and he couldn't. So she grabbed him and she shoved his head in the fireplace till all the skin was burned off his head and he died. Now, KFRM, the general manager, just dropped The Great American Story because of that story. I didn't say anything offensive in it. And I have stories that are even more horrible than that, believe it or not. I'm sure you've probably heard them. But nonetheless, that's how shallow this guy is. And it's not the station. The station loves it. And the people listening to it love it. But that one guy, you talk about oversensitive. I'm starting to think he's not only liberal. I'm starting to think that he's uber liberal. Or, you know, with the first time he dropped us because I made fun of a guy who cut off his own nads, I was thinking, well, maybe he had his nads cut off. And I could understand why you'd be sensitive about that. But I'm pretty sure since he's the general manager of a large radio station, he never had his head pushed into a fireplace. So I'm not sure what that's about. I think maybe he's afraid of the fact that I told a story about a black woman who was evil in this certain period of time right now when we seem to have a war on white America. Maybe that's it. I don't know. You got a clue, Santos? Any idea?
I'd have to meet the guy to give you a good option as to what's going on there, but I don't, it doesn't make any sense to me. Some people are just sensitive. It doesn't matter what their color of their skin is. It's just they have thin skin.
Right.
And it sounds like he's like one of those guys.
What's up with that? Well, that's okay, though, because we're still on many, many other stations. So they're the ones going to miss out, you know, and I'm sure, like last time, you know, I kept in touch with the program director, and he said phone was ringing off the hook. He said the audience was furious, and they were calling in. They were using bad language. What in the blank happened to the great American story, damn it? I'm sure that's probably going on again.
I hope so.
Yeah, I'd like to be a fly on a wall and hear the explanations he gives all of them. You know, the general manager canceled it because he was offended by one of the stories. What? Why don't you just not play that story? I mean, there are hundreds of them. Why don't you just not play that one if you don't like it? In fact, that's what we said the first time he cut it. Well, if you don't like that story, why don't you just not play it? Just don't play it. You like the other ones. Well, I'll guarantee you he probably voted for Obama twice.
In the same election.
In the same election, yeah. Holy mackerel. Well, you know what? We're going to take some callers. Anybody want to call in, you can do so. 530-742-5555. 530-742-5555. You can call in. You can talk about anything you want. You don't have to talk about what I'm talking about now. There's a lot to talk about in America these days, as a matter of fact. And, you know, one of the things Lou left me this little thing. It's like a copy from a news article or something. Oh, okay, here's from Alan West. Okay, well, I'd like to see Alan West get elected president. I think he'd be a good one, but about the Confederate flag. And it is pretty funny. You know, it says, I won't read the whole thing, but it says, yippee, the Confederate flag has now been removed from the grounds of the South Carolina State Capitol. And just like that, it solves the problem of black-on-black crime and killings. Now we'll see out of wedlock birth rate in the black community drop from 75%. There will be better educational opportunities in schools in South Carolina's black communities and all across America. The black unemployment rate will drop, especially the almost 40% black teenage unemployment rate. We'll now see an economic entrepreneurial boon in the inner cities because the Confederate battle flag's been lowered, and there'll be no more gangs of black beatings on whites, as we saw in Ohio. And it goes on. It's pretty funny, but it's meant to be funny. It's sarcastic. And basically what it's saying is, in other words, all of the problems that the black community faces are all going to go away now. And all the problems between the whites and the blacks and the racial disharmony and all that in America, oh, it's all going to go away now because we lowered the bars and the stars. And I tell you what, I don't really care whether they have the flag on the I don't care about the flag, that flag. I care about the American flag. But I do care about the fact that, well, put it this way, it's so damned ignorant, because the people who think that the Confederate flag is a racist thing absolutely know nothing about that part of history. Nothing. Nothing at all. And they make such a big issue out of that as if it's going to solve all these problems. Yeah, yeah, we'll take that piece of fabric down and we'll put it in a museum and we'll tear down this statue and we'll paint that statue red. It's just ridiculous. What the hell's happening in America here? Unbelievable. Well, anyway, I didn't want to get on that rant anyway. Well, we're going to play another story right now. It's called Radio Man. This one's backed by popular request, and then we'll be back and close out Hour 1 and move into Hour 2 of The Great American Story.
The carrier wave supplies the power, and the wave made in the microphone writes its signature on it. The result is the radio wave. Now comes the job of making this radio wave strong enough so that it will get to your radio. In order that you may hear it, we have to amplify the current in these big tubes gradually through several stages. In the first stage, the wave looks a little bigger. Then it gets still bigger, more powerful. And finally, it thunders out of the power strong enough to carry it over a wide radius. This radio wave is then sent to the antenna from which it is released. It leaves the antenna as vibrations and travels in all directions with the speed of light.
You know, what if I told you that Marconi was not the father of the radio?
And finally, your own aerial.
Well, you can check the books, check again, but I'm telling you, he was not. The guy's name was Stubblefield. Well, I'm Bob Day, and I'm fixing to in just 1 minute when I come back with another great American story. You know, if you're in the telecom industry and you don't know what a bond washer is, then you are way behind the curve. You better go find out now at bondwasher.com. That's BONDwasher.com. Bondwasher.com. And you better hurry before your boss finds out that you do not know what a bond washer is. Bondwasher.com. Bondwashers at bondwasher.com. Guglielmo Marconi was just a pubescent kid in 1890 when Nathan Stubblefield had invented the first working radio on his farm in Kentucky. But like most of us, we have a great idea and never do the paperwork or pursue it, let alone get a patent. By the time he finally got around to messing with paperwork and patents, Marconi was already busting into the world stage through the electronic industry. By the time Stubblefield had put on his first public demonstration, he was too late. Way too late. Marconi, just 1 month before, had already sent the letter S across the Atlantic. The big difference is this, and it's a big difference. Marconi only sent a couple of dots and dashes, Morse code, while Stubblefield transmitted voice and music with accompaniment from his son, who played the mouth harp, a.k.a. harmonica. He later gave another more impressive demonstration from a boat, to prove there were no hidden wires, on the Potomac River outside Washington, D.C. And get this, while Marconi was still pecking out Morse code in 1908, Stubblefield had already got a patent on a radio which, powered by its own battery, yes, portable,
Mr. Pop,
was meant for horse-drawn carriages. In other words, in 1908, Nathan Stubblefield was technically not only just the father of the radio, but the car stereo, the auto radio, before there were autos. I guess it didn't go too well because most people couldn't afford it. But there were a few out there. Nonetheless, they did exist. Well, good old Nathan Stubblefield never did really make any money from any of his inventions, and his marriage eventually went to the birds, too. But he just kept a tinkering away, and his finances continued to dwindle until eventually good old Nathan Stubblefield, the father of the radio, the real king and father of all broadcasting, found himself living alone and broke, in absolute poverty, in a shed, yes, a shed, near his hometown of Murray, Kentucky, where in 1928 he was also found emaciated and dead. Nathan Stubblefield, the real father of radio, had starved to death. Yes, he starved to death. Wow. Man. Note to self. Remember to apply for that patent on freak repellent. And to all y'all out there, those ideas you got hidden up your sleeve, better pull them out before somebody else does. I'm Bob Day. I've just told you another great American story.
Back, and it was one of the saddest stories I've ever done. I kind of have a love-hate relationship with that story. I love it and I hate it at the same time. We had a caller call in right when the show, when the story started. A guy named River Bottoms Ron said that he hung up before the story was over. So if you're out there, you want to call in, call back in, Ron. But the Mighty Santos told me you guys talked a little bit and thought maybe I had floated past your camp last weekend when I was floating down the Yuba River. Probably did. And I don't know. Didn't see your camp. But either way, keep your eyes open for, tomorrow, because we're going to be floating again tomorrow. And you'll probably see us go by. Be a big old horde of people on a big, giant blue and white raft with a bunch of little orange rafts. Oh, you called back? Okay. Hey, Ron, how you doing?
Hey, Bob. I was just wondering if you stopped by.
Oh, Ron.
I grew on the beach with my family.
Yeah, no, we didn't go all that way. We didn't go that far. I know who you are now. I thought it might have been you, but no, we floated from Park. We put in at Parks Bar Bridge, and then we got out at Hammond Grove. But tomorrow we will be floating all the way down to your beach tomorrow. So we will see you tomorrow.
It takes about 4 hours from Hallwood.
Right. Yeah, we're going to go in the morning. And we're going to put in somewhere, I think, up at Hammond Grove, and a little lower. And then we'll have to take out at the dam and walk them around the dam. But we're going to be stopping there at your beach tomorrow. So we'll see you down there if we make it that far.
Yeah, good enough. You missed a good fireworks show.
Oh, did I? Well, I tell you what, some of the are you talking about real fireworks or the kind of fireworks show that you have to call the cops for?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah, the Yuba River, it's surprising how low it is too. Yeah, it's not really all that surprising, but it's lower than I thought it was going to be. I'm used to it there by your place, but further up, I hadn't been up there for a while and it's really, really low. Anyway, thanks for calling in, Ron. We'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, see you, Bob.
Yeah, it was River Bottoms Ron. Yeah, I know him as Ron. Didn't know him by his nickname, but good guy. Great American, veteran, and great all-around guy, good friend. And I'll tell you what, he has a hell of a time down there on his section of the beach. A lot of people walk over there from Marysville, which is the town we're broadcasting out of, and they just leave trash and crap all over the place, and it just pisses everybody off, pisses Ron off, pisses me off. You know, if you all are going out to the river to have a good time, take back with you the things that you brought, for crying out loud. And it's not going to weigh as much. It wasn't too hard to bring it to the river, was it? When all the cans of beer were full, they were heavier. So when you're taking your empties out with you, they're lighter. Your chip bags are lighter because they're emptier. Everything's lighter. You got no excuse for leaving it all over the beach, especially the broken glass. It's just ridiculous. People got to have a respect for the land around you. And, you know, you complain about all the different gates that have been put up on the levees, and you can't go here and you can't go there. Well, why do you think? So the bad people ruin it for everybody. You go down to the river, beautiful river, and you leave trash all over the place, and you expect them not to put a gate there? Get real. Yeah, that's my public service announcement for the day. And we're going to bump out of hour one of The Great American Story, and we're going to be right back after the news with more of The Great American Story. So stick around.
The very reason why we, the United States of America, are the greatest nation in all of the human experience is because we are all a literal etouffee of every culture on this planet, all living and working together as a team and blessed by the living God with the freedom to express our thoughts, protect our families, and pursue our dreams. In fact, it's the very recipe which formulates The Great American Story. I'm Bob Day, and once again I welcome you all to another excellent installment of the very best in intellectual radio entertainment. It's The Great American Story. Amazing guests, live conversations, and the stories of our own people told in ways you've never heard before. Now, just sit back and relax, open your mind, and prepare to wrap it around a piece of mind. I'm Bob Day, and I'll be right back with another Great American Story.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776. And the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I am Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee, Grant, and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders Fields and on the rock of Corregidor, on the bleak slopes of Korea, and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I am Independence Hall, the Monitor. I am the Merrimack. I'm big. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific. My arms reach out to embrace Hawaii and Alaska. 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia with his bread loaf under his arm. You can see Betsy Ross with her needle. You can see the lights of Christmas and hear the strains of Auld Lang Syne as the calendar turns again.
You know, I've heard a lot of ghost stories in my time, and most of them are really kind of silly. And not too often are they ever really believed. However, this one's different. In fact, I don't think I've ever heard a ghost story which was so widely believed as the one I'm about to tell you. And this one is really not silly at all. In fact, just thinking about it gives me the heebie-jeebies. I'm Bob Day, and I'll be right back with another great American story.
You know, if you're in the telecom industry and you don't know what a bond washer is, then you are way behind the curve. You better go find out now at bondwasher.com. That's BONDwasher.com. Bondwasher.com. And you better hurry before your boss finds out that you do not know what a bond washer is. Bondwasher.com. Bondwashers at bondwasher.com.
You know, if you were to take a stroll through any of the little towns and villages in the Appalachia region and ask people about the name Octavia Hatcher, nearly everyone you ask will indeed know the name and probably tell you the story of her death and how her specter still to this day haunts the cemetery where she was buried and can even be heard at times crying over the death of her baby boy. Most of the people in Appalachia believe the legend of Octavia Hatcher and hold it tightly to their hearts as a dear part of Appalachian history. Octavia Hatcher was married to James Hatcher, a wealthy landowner and businessman in Pikeville, Kentucky in 1889 at just the age of 19 years old. Just a couple of years later, in January of 1891, she fell to depression and became gravely ill after the death of her newborn baby boy. Some say that her illness was a result or effect of the extreme state of depression she suffered. Others said that she had been infected by what was once known as sleeping sickness. And yet some others actually believed that she had been bitten by tsetse flies, which somehow made it across the Atlantic Ocean from Africa and only bit her. Well, who really knows, but nonetheless, Octavia was apparently, yes, I said apparently, deceased. Dead. Or was she? Eventually, after much examination and postulation over what had taken Octavia's life, she was indeed buried in the Pikeville Cemetery, where her beloved James had erected a magnificent headstone with a marble sculpture of Octavia in her perfect likeness in every detail, tightly clutching a parasol in her left hand above her grave. So far, you're all probably wondering, you know, well, what's so strange about this story? Well, here's the part that gives me the heebie-jeebies. A couple of days after Octavia Hatcher was interred, several other people about town became ill with the very same symptoms, and most fell into what we now call comas. They didn't know too much about comas back then. They called it sleeping sickness. In short order, Octavia's doctor began to think that he had made a terrible mistake and buried Octavia alive. In a panic, the doc went to the court and obtained orders to exhume Octavia's grave. When the casket was opened, much to the worst fears of the doc and Mr. Hatcher, there were scratches on the inside. Indeed, Octavia Hatcher had been buried alive and gave all she had, trying to claw her way out of her own grave. Until finally, dying of asphyxiation and fear. Man. Well, as scary as it may be, and as long as it has been believed, there is one very big problem with this story. In fact, in all of my research, I could not get past this one very perplexing question. Why are there absolutely no records of any kind from the court, from the cemetery, from the doctor's office, or even from the vast writings of James regarding the exhumation of Hatcher's grave? Were the records destroyed to save face and prevent litigation? Were the records lost in history or the changes of time? Or is it all just another urban legend? Well, I guess we'll never really know the truth, but nonetheless, I do believe that the legend of Octavia Hatcher will always remain as one of the most beloved and most believed stories in all of Appalachian history, true or not. I, for one, being unable to disprove Octavia's legend, will just leave it where it is, true or not. In fact, they say that even to this day, if you go to the Pikeville Cemetery in Kentucky at night, you can still see Octavia's ghost strolling around the grounds and weeping over the dead baby boy she holds in her arms. Man. Now, I guess I won't be going there. I'm Bob Day, and I've just told you another great American story.
Of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich, working harder than ever, but getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our opportunities, you can start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss, work from home, and live a happier life. At Be the Boss Network, you'll find hundreds of work-from-home opportunities that you can literally start today and be earning money as soon as next week. Go to freedom118.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss. Get out of the rat race. Work from home. Go to freedom118.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 118.com. Go to freedom118.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You be the boss. Go to freedom118.com.
Hey everybody, Mike Rayford here, a.k.a. Mike the Wine Guy, with a reminder for you to tune into The Good Life Show, a Saturday afternoon talk show that is interesting, fun, informative, and entertaining, where we cover food, wine, travel, and lifestyle. That's The Good Life Show, your weekend antidote for the rest of the week. Every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4, right here on KMYC, 1410 AM, Marysville, Yuba City. Visit MikeTheWineGuy.com to listen to the free podcast, and follow us on Facebook at Mike the Wine Guy.
And that story was called Octavia. Man, I'll tell you what, I'm glad I'm not Octavia, or wasn't. It freaked me out. I wrote the story, and it still freaks me out when I think about it, being buried alive. I got two kids sitting in here with me in the studio, my two youngest, Mac and Jacob Boomstick, as they call him in baseball. And we call Mac, his nickname is Spuds, because he likes to give people potatoes for their birthday. And I'm not kidding. He gave me a birthday present. My last birthday, I unwrapped it, and it was a potato. So we call him Spuds now. Anyway, that story freaks me out. I was thinking about something. I was thinking about claustrophobia. And, I had a claustrophobic experience in an MRI tube a few weeks back, or that was last month. And started thinking about, I'm feeling kind of claustrophobic now. In relation to what's going on in our country.
Just thinking about it? Oh.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah, like when you're trapped in a small space and you can't do anything about it, you can't get out. That's kind of how I feel about what's going on here in the country. All this stuff that's going on, it's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And, normally I kind of handle these subjects with kids' gloves because I don't want to get too controversial. I don't want to get all political on this and that. But sometimes I can't help it. I can't help it. Look what's happening to our country. It's being dismantled, or at least they're trying to dismantle what they call white America. And there's no sense behind it. There's no logic behind it. Now, did you hear, Santos? There's a documentary that's being aired on MTV called Being White.
Right, yeah. Like a reality type show? Or
no, it's a documentary.
About white privilege?
Yeah, about white privilege. And it's going to show a bunch of white kids that are crying because they're so grief-stricken over what white people have, all the evils that white people have done in America and to the world and all this stuff. And I can't remember the guy's name right off the bat. I didn't write it down or anything. But I do know that the guy, he's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author. He's Mexican, but he's also an illegal alien.
Oh, good.
He's the producer. He's the guy who wrote and produced this show on being white. I think it's called White People or Being White, something like that. And, I'll tell you what. Think about all the evil things that white people have done in this country. Let's see. One evil thing that we've done in this country, let's see. Okay, we stopped slavery. We invented 91% of everything that has been invented. Should I go on? I can go on. Oh, we're just evil people, aren't we? It's just incredible. And it makes me sick to see what's happening to this country. And really what it is what they're attempting to do is, quote, dismantle white America. And that's not my quote. I've heard that several times from some of these people. Unfortunately, one of them is, I'm not going to call her the First Lady. She doesn't deserve that respect. But Barry Obama's wife has been going around to colleges and Indian reservations talking about all the evil things that white people have done and talking, like a while back, she's talking to these universities and giving speeches about how, I understand how you feel about white privilege in America and how the white man has held you down and this and that and the other thing. And as far as I know, yeah, obviously, I haven't been alive for 240 years, but I am at least an amateur student of American history. And to my knowledge, I don't think there has ever been a president's wife that has been so divisive. In fact, I can't think of any president's wife in American history that was divisive at all, at all. Yet the things that she's saying are more divisive. Well, let's put it this way. She's doing exactly the same thing that Malcolm X and the leaders of the Black Panthers were doing in the 60s and early 70s. And I can't stand it. I can't stand it anymore. It's ridiculous. They are literally starting, you're undoing all of the headway that has been made in the southern states over race. You know, and they're going on this war path against the Confederate flag and any statues of Confederate leaders and generals and this and that. And they hold themselves up as intelligent, and some of these people actually are, because they made it through college. Some of them have Harvard degrees, and they know nothing about the Civil War or why it was fought. And if anybody disagrees with me, get your head out of your butt and start studying American history, and you will find many, many writings from Abraham Lincoln himself that said that the Civil War had nothing to do with slavery. In fact, I wish I had brought it with me. There is a letter written by Abraham Lincoln, and I got a copy of it at home. But yesterday, Michael Savage was talking about it. Mark Levine brought it up on his radio show also, where Lincoln wrote it himself, and you can read it yourself. All you got to do is a little bit of research, where he's saying that his efforts in the Civil War have nothing to do with slavery, and that his efforts were to keep the Union together and take away state rights to the states' rights to secede from the Union. That's his reason for the Civil War, was to keep the United States Union united. And it says, regardless of whether a slave is freed or not, it had nothing to do with it. It had to do with tyranny. It had to do with the federal government taking everything from the southern states that they were earning. They were getting rich from their cotton industry, and the federal government wanted to take their money. They wanted to tax the hell out of them and put tariffs on them. They wanted absolute control over the cotton, because they were one of the major linen producers in the world. Their number one customer who bought the linens that were made in the northern states was Britain. And the South got tired of it. The South said, no, you're not going to use us as slaves. What they were doing was making slaves out of the entire South. Look, you're going to bust your butt making cotton for us so we can keep our linen industry going and we can continue making money. To hell with you guys. Just shut up and keep picking our cotton. And the South said, I've had enough. I ain't going to take it anymore. I've had enough. That's why the rebel flag is called the rebel flag. They were rebelling against the federal government. That was the whole point. And how American is that? Isn't that what we did against the British? We rebelled against them because of the same damn reason. So I think that's a pretty American, that flag stands for a pretty American concept, and has nothing to do with slavery. And Abraham Lincoln said so himself, and he's the one who started the damn war. So all you people out there, I'm sure none of them are probably listening to this show, but in case you are, if you're one of these liberal trouble jockeys, they're just going around trying to cause more trouble so you can make a name for yourself, so you can tell your grandchildren, oh, look how cool I was back in the 2015 era. I was a rebel like the people in the 60s, like the hippies in the 70s. That's why most people are wanting to do it. And a lot of people are doing it, so look at me. Look at me. Look how open-minded and fair I am. And you have no freaking idea what that flag meant. Now, I don't really care whether you take it down or not. It's the point. I don't wave the rebel flag on my house. I wave the American flag, which I think everybody should do. But it's still a very important part of American history. Look, it's one of the bloodiest wars in human history. It was the bloodiest war in our history. And you're going to try and erase that? Because you have some idiotic delusion that it had something to do with slavery? Why don't you get in front of the internet instead of spending all your time on Facebook telling people how cool the weather is or how cool your kitten is? Why don't you get online and find out what that flag meant and what the Civil War was about? There, I said it. we'll be right back with one of my favorite stories. It's another old one, but it's about one of the greatest inventions in all of human history, which was given to us by a white guy. If you want to call me a racist, go ahead, but I'm not completely white. So there,
I said that too.
We'll be right back with more of the Great American Story.
What could you do with a $100 Visa gift card? A lot, right? $100 can get you a lot of things, including peace of mind. We're Alliance Home Security, and we give our customers peace of mind and $100 Visa gift cards. Right now, and only through this exclusive radio offer, we're giving every homeowner who has us install our home security system and signs up for our monitoring service a $100 Visa gift card. No tricks, no gimmicks, just a world-class home security system installed in your home for free, and you receive a $100 Visa gift card. Put this number in your smartphone or just call us right now. 1-800-521-3436. That's 1-800-521-3436. Ask us to install your home security system and get a $100 Visa gift card. 1-800-521-3436. Free same-day installation and a $100 Visa gift card. 1-800-521-3436. Call right now.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich, working harder than ever, but getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our opportunities, you can start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss, work from home, and live a happier life. At Be The Boss Network, you'll find hundreds of work-from-home opportunities that you can literally start today and be earning money as soon as next week. Go to freedom118.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss. Get out of the rat race. Work from home. Go to freedom118.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 118.com. Go to freedom118.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You be the boss. Go to freedom118.com.
Inventions in human history was nylons. That's right, nylon stockings. There's very little worse than clammy white legs on a woman, and I bet you guys out there, and I guess even nowadays some of you women would agree. I'm Bob Day, and I'll be right back with another great American story.
Hi, I'm 7 years old and I'm blind.
Help Ravina and other blind people by making a tax-deductible donation of your used car, truck, or almost anything with wheels to the National Federation of the Blind. Just call 866-282-7327 or visit carshelpingtheblind.com. That's carshelpingtheblind.com. And if you know a blind person who needs help, email nfb@nfb.org.
I know I probably ticked off a whole bunch of Hillarites out there, but I don't care. I have to admit, I love nylons. However, the story of the wonderful, wonderful man who invented the material used for the beautifully deceptive hosiery is a very, very sad one. His name was Wallace Carruthers. He was a chemistry professor at Harvard University who, in 1921, was hired by DuPont Chemical as the head of their research team. In fact, one of the big breakthroughs his research team made was neoprene rubber, which made DuPont some major bucks. Well, even as successful as neoprene was with big industry and as much money as DuPont made from it, when the Great Depression hit, DuPont cut its budget and changed several policies, which left Wallace and his guys in the research lab doing what they thought of as vain and low-budget commercial development rather than true scientific research.
The job just became mundane and fruitless, and eventually Wallace sank into a deep depression he just couldn't pull out of. Well, everything began to change for Wallace, and with the U.S. in such a financial vacuum, he just couldn't walk right back into his old life and job at the university. Wallace felt like all had come to a bitter and sudden end. So, in 1937, on April 29th, alone and depressed in a hotel room, Wallace Carruthers, the man who not only changed all of industry and technology as we know it, thus changing the world forever and even better, gave us the nylon stockings we men so dearly love. Just 3 weeks after he was awarded the patent for nylon, purposely swallowed cyanide and died. Man, he didn't even live to see and feel the wonders of his own creation. Oh well, I'll just have to do it for him. I'm Bob Day, and I've just told you another great American story.
Nylons, like I told you, one of the greatest inventions in human history. It was given to us by a white guy. Boy, the evil things white people have done in this country. I think it would be evil to take away nylons. No one's tried to do that yet. Like I said, who likes clammy white legs on a woman? Now, nowadays, not even women, you know, if you can call them that. I have a hard time telling women from men a lot of the time nowadays. And, you know, you can call me whatever you want, but I'm old school. I like the days when you could tell the women apart from the men.
And but enough about Caitlyn Jenner.
Oh, God. Oh, man, I've gone so long without that in my head, and you just put it back.
Sorry.
We
can edit that out.
Well, it is a subject for conversation, though. It's just, you know, I don't get it. That's not even the right way to put it. I don't even know what word to use. He used to be one of my biggest heroes, and I refuse to call Bruce Jenner Caitlyn, and I refuse to refer to him as a her. I'll call him an it. I will. I'd call him that to his face, but I will not. I will not play this game. I will not call him a her, and I will not. I won't play into the game. I won't call him Caitlyn. Nope. Once Bruce, always Bruce. And I don't care how feminine he gets. I'll call him Bruce to his face. And, you know, he used to be one hell of an athlete. In fact, he was the greatest athlete in human history there for a while. But you know what? Looking at him now, I'm not too worried about him kicking my butt. Oh, man, what is happening to this world? It's insane. And here they give him this, ESPN gave him the
Courage Award?
Yeah, Courage in Athletics Award.
Right.
Yet he hasn't been involved in any athletics since the 80s.
Over a, I can't remember what she was, a female athlete who
she
battled,
was a soccer player who
battled cancer.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there you go.
And later died. You know, they were thinking about giving it to her, and there was one other athlete, I can't remember his name either. Of course, you know, it's pretty obvious to you listeners out there. I don't really make a lot of notes and stuff, you know. But it's the principle that I'm talking about, not the person. And I've had it. You know, I was surfing through the channels last night after I was done putting the show together, looking for something to watch. And then all of a sudden, there's this giant, I don't know what you call it, a convention or a conference, whatever. There's thousands of people all lined up for this thing called the Transgender Pride or Transgender Freedom thing or whatever, and they're all waving rainbow flags and this and that and the other thing. It's like, come on. Why do we have to know this? I don't want to know. You know what? I can't even talk about this subject anymore. I'm going to say something that will get me kicked off the radio if I'm not careful, but all this stuff happening right now, look what has happened to this country since Barack Obama became president. We got this thing going on with the gay marriage. We got this thing going on with the Confederate anything, whether it be a flag or a statue of Robert E. Lee.
Mm-hmm. Or a car.
Uh-huh. And now the white guy is the bad guy because we're white. And they are trying to kind of put out this feeling and make it common to everybody that if you're white, you're a racist because you're born that way because you're white. Isn't that the most racist statement that you can make?
Well, Obama's half white, so why isn't he at least half racist?
Right. And, you know, why don't I hear on conservative radio or on conservative television, why don't we hear about the statements that he made in his own book? Like where he says, and people, if you doubt me, get online, get on YouTube, or go get the book, the audio book, Dreams of My Father. And I can't remember what chapter it's in. I want to say chapter 12, but just look for it, and you'll find it. And he narrated the book, so you hear him say it with his own mouth. He said, I was 17 years old when I realized why I hate America so much, why I hate the white man so much, and decided that I would never again claim my white half or admit that my mother or grandmother were white. And look what he's doing now. And then we hear the other day he's because of his budget cuts, we're going to cut 40,000 more troops out of the Army. And here we are at one of the most dangerous points in our history. And not just American history, but world history. We got the rise of ISIS. We got Iran taking over Iraq. We're on the verge of we're back in the Cold War. We got Putin over there flexing all of his muscles, and we're cutting the military down. It's already without the 40,000 extra 40,000 troops. We're already smaller than the military was before World War II. It's insane. I truly believe, and I don't care if you want to take me off your station because I'm getting too political, I don't care. I'm going to say it because this is my country, and I'm tired of it being torn apart by our enemy. And I believe Barack Obama is our enemy. I believe he is working for the Muslim extremists intentionally, but doing it from the White House, and so is his wife. Here she is talking the other day in front of a college. Oh, I understand how it is with this white privilege and, you know, not being allowed in here and people thinking that you're assuming that you're a waiter or a servant of some kind. And she's given this speech 2 days after her and her two daughters went on a shopping trip in Rome on the taxpayer's bill, and they used Air Force One to do it. Oh, yeah, you sound really disenfranchised to me. What's this white privilege thing you're talking about? I've never got to ride on Air Force One. I don't get to go to Rome, buy a new pair of jeans. I got to go to Walmart. Oh, man. I got to stop. Santos.
Yes, I'm listening.
Your dad was Mexican, right?
Yes.
Your dad?
Right.
He came here legally, didn't he?
Well, his grandfather, or his father, right. My
his
grandfather.
Father. Right. Right. Yes. But your Mexican side of the family, they came here the right way, the American way, and they're great Americans, right?
Yep. Seen the documents.
That's right.
Yep. And you my mom is a naturalized American who was born in Germany.
And I bet if you could get them all here
and
ask them this question, ask them how they feel about our so-called leaders intentionally keeping the border open so that they can get Hispanic votes and amnesty for illegal aliens and the whole issue going on right now, all the stuff that Trump said, I bet you get the same answer from every one of them. I bet you they are pissed off because they went through the process, they did it right, and they see somebody coming in doing it for free and our leaders trying to make it possible for more of them.
Right.
It's insane.
Well, I still have a ton of relatives in Corpus Christi, Texas, and other parts of Texas. And, yeah, that's exactly what they say. They came here legally. They all speak English. They consider themselves Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course, they're proud of their heritage, but they're Americans.
Right.
They all speak English. They have nothing against. They love America. So, yeah, they're totally against the illegals coming across into Texas, taking jobs, doing work, leaving. Well, I don't want to sound like too much like Trump. I'm not running for president, but they leave trash all along their trail that they come into this country through the ranches and whatever the case may be. And, yeah, it's not a
Right. It's insane.
Yeah.
And here, you know, what Trump said, what everybody's coming down on Trump for,
mm-hmm.
what he said was absolutely correct, and nobody can dispute that. They do dispute it, mm-hmm. but they do it with no facts behind what they're... All you have to do is look at the statistics.
Right.
And it's insane.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just the Democrats that are throwing Trump under the bus. The Republicans are doing it, too, because they don't want him to be president. Because they can't control him. They can't corrupt him, and they know that. He's not a part of the Washington Club. I think he's a great American. He may be a jerk in a lot of ways,
mm-hmm.
but I don't care. I don't care if a guy's nice or not when I go to the ballot box. I care about what he believes in and what he is going to do for this country. I think Donald Trump would be a damn good president.
Right.
I do.
Well, the other world leaders that he'd be dealing with aren't exactly Boy Scouts themselves. So.
That's right. That's right. You know, it's like a conversation I had the other day with somebody when they were talking about Barack Obama and how he's running this country down about all the evil that we do in this country and this and that. Yet then he goes over and he kisses up to Iran? Holy mackerel. Get some common sense. Pop your head out of your butt till you have before you get a permanent brown ring around your neck. Holy crap, man. It's unbelievable. Anyway, you know, talking about corruption... Well, one of the other issues we got here is this war on cops. And there are a few bad cops out there, but most of them are pretty good. You know, and in fact, you ought to thank them for their service because they're having a harder time right now doing their job than they have in probably 30 or 40 years. Now, this is a story backed by popular request also. And this actually was a bad cop. And there's a few of them out there. It's called The Ballad of Sheriff Plummer, and we'll be right back after that with more of The Great American Story. You know, sometimes it can be pretty hard to tell the difference between a good cop and a bad cop, especially these days. Well, I'm fixing to tell you a story about a cop who had everyone fooled. I'm Bob Day, and I'll be right back with another Great American Story.
You know, if you're in the telecom industry and you don't know what a bond washer is, then you are way behind the curve. You better go find out now at bondwasher.com. That's BONDwasher.com. Bondwasher.com. And you better hurry before your boss finds out that you do not know what a bond washer is. Bondwasher.com. Bond washers at bondwasher.com. Henry Plummer was a charismatic young man from the eastern states who, like many back then, had sold everything he could, packed up the rest, and headed west. Plummer eventually stopped in the Northern California gold rush town of Nevada City, where he somehow not only landed himself the job of town marshal, but the heart of a married woman as well. And after killing the woman's husband, landed himself a nice 10-year prison sentence, too. Well, for a guy like Henry Plummer, though, that wasn't much of nothing. You see, somehow, Henry Plummer, while he was in prison, managed to get himself pardoned from prison after serving only a few years. Plummer was free. And as soon as he could, Plummer mounted his pony and made tracks all the way to the little town of Lewiston in Idaho's gold country. And once he was there, Henry Plummer quickly formed up a gang and worked at night robbing and killing miners. One night, the plan went bad, and one of Plummer's men was strung up by the neck. Once again, Plummer took off. This time, to Bannock, Montana, where he killed the only man in town who knew who he was and began to use his charisma to get ahead. And get ahead was just what he did, too.
Believe it or not, Henry Plummer not only managed to get himself acquitted for his second murder, he actually got himself elected to the position of sheriff. Yes, it's true, sheriff. And the people of Bannock loved him. See, Sheriff Plummer impressed all the people with his zero-tolerance policy. And especially with the bandits running around killing, stealing, raping, and murdering all over the Gold Country, that's exactly what the people of Bannock wanted to hear. In fact, he went farther to impress his new constituents by building a bigger, better set of gallows from which to hang the very criminals they feared. But, you know, as much as they thought they knew their sheriff and definitely loved and respected him, the citizens of Bannock did not know one very, very important thing. Their sheriff, Henry Plummer, was moonlighting. You see, by day, Henry Plummer was their faithful sheriff, sworn to protect and serve. The one who had promised these very people to bring down the bandits. But by night, he was the very evil they all feared, and the evil he promised to protect them from. Yes, Plummer and his gang terrorized the stretch between Bannock and Virginia City, robbing miners and anyone else with any wealth, killing anyone who got in the way. Sheriff Plummer had made it. At least in his mind, he had made it to the big time. That is, at least until one of his henchmen was caught by a group of vigilantes. And before he swung, the henchmen sung. That's right, he told the group of vigilantes everything they wanted to know, including the sheriff's real identity. The sheriff they had all trusted, who had promised to protect them from the bandits, was the leader of the bandits himself. The entire town was motivated by the vigilante success and grouped up for the hunt as well. Now, Plummer was once again on the run and eventually caught. Yes, this time he was caught. And there was no one he could count on for a pardon. Then one very dark, cold, and eerie night in the streets of Bannock, Montana, while an icy Arctic wind blew through the little town, the once scared but now very proud citizens watched on as Sheriff Henry Plummer's struggling body ironically swung from the very gallows which he himself had built. Apparently, Sheriff Plummer had broken a law greater than that of man's. I call it the Golden Rule. Others call it karma. I'm Bob Day, and I've just told you another great American story.
Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell them that God's gonna cut you down.
And that was a ballad of Sheriff Plummer. I know we played that before, but I get a lot of requests. A lot of times I don't play them, but yeah, once in a while I do. That's a good one. You know, you talk about a bad cop. Now, that's what you call a bad cop. And, you know, like I said earlier, we got a war on cops these days. And it's coming from the top, coming from the least expected place. You would think that the president of the United States, whoever it be, would want to protect the cops. He would want to watch out for them and want to support them. He would want to, do and say things that would build respect between the cops and between the cops and the civilians and taxpayers. But right now we got the opposite. You know, it doesn't make any sense. You got any idea? Why would they be doing this?
I don't know. But what really confuses me is that the union, the cop unions, or unions in general, tend to support Democrats. But you never really hear a union representative speak out on behalf of their, what do you call them, their members, their dues payers.
Right.
That seems kind of strange. That's they just even twisting in the wind.
That's a good point, Santos, because through all of this, I haven't heard a single word from the law enforcement union. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard any union representatives standing up saying, hey, this ain't right.
Right.
None of them.
Yeah, normally a union employee, you almost can't
right.
fire them or get rid of them. But these cops, they just, within a few days, they're gone.
Right.
I don't understand it. But
look at the one that shot Mike Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just trying to defend himself, obviously. Right. And that was proven in court, regardless of what anybody out there says.
Mm-hmm.
The whole situation was investigated and was proven that Mike Brown was in the wrong.
Right.
And as far as the cop who shot him,
mm-hmm.
he did the right thing. He might have been a lousy shot. Mm-hmm. I will say that. He was a lousy shot. But still, he's in hiding. Who knows even where this guy is?
Yeah, some of these guys have their home addresses
right.
Released in the press. And not only that, but was it the Freddie Gray killing in New
right.
York, where three of the officers were black and three were white, but somehow it's still considered a racially motivated
right.
Crime. And yeah, the three black cops they're left twisting in the wind as well. So
yeah, I guess the fact that they are black, it didn't work out for the agenda.
Right.
So they just call them Uncle Toms.
Black and union members, but for some
right.
reason, I don't understand how all this stuff works, and I don't know that I want to, but
right.
it just confuses me.
You know, one of these days, I'm gonna bring some statistics in with me about how many white people have been unjustly shot by black cops. No one ever talks about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just 6 miles away from the Michael Brown shooting in St. Louis, the very next day, there was a 14-year-old white boy who was shot and killed by a black cop because he was trying to get the phone out of his pocket. No one says a doggone thing about that, or the white guy that had the crap kicked out of him down in San Bernardino. Don't see that on the news. 10 cops stomping on his head and kicking him in the face and and we had full video footage of that. They showed it once. You know, Fox is just as much to blame. Yeah, I think they have an agenda too, because they leave out a lot of important stuff, and they do have an agenda. Well, I'm not going to go there. I don't have time. This show's about over. Just want to remind everybody, you know, be back here every week, every Saturday, noon to 2 Pacific time. And you can also catch us online worldwide from Blog Talk Radio. You can catch our shows at The Great American Story with BobDay.com. Don't quit waving your flag. People are trying to get you to stop. Don't stop. Don't stop waving your flag. Don't stop your pride in our nation. We are exceptional. No one's like us. No one's as good as our country is. And don't let anybody kid you. We've done a lot of great things around this world, whether we're white or not. You see a cop, shake his hand, thank him for his service. And do the same for our military, because they're being torn apart right now, too. Anyway, have a good weekend, and treat people right. And don't stop waving that flag. Adios.